Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question and answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your touch-tone phone to ask a question. I would like to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I would like to turn the conference over to Jenny Lyons. Thank you, ma'am. You may begin.
Thank you, Tori. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jenny Lyons, and I'm with Public Affairs here at NOAA Fisheries. Today, NOAA Fisheries is declaring an unusual mortality event for Guadalupe fur seals, a species protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act and listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. We have with us today Justin Vizbicki with the NOAA Fisheries Stranding Coordinator for the West Coast region. Justin is going to provide a brief summary of our news. We also have Tanaya Norris from the Marine Mammal Center and Sue Pemberton of the California Academy of Science to talk about what is happening with the animals that we are finding. And finally, Toby Garfield with NOAA Fisheries Southwest Fisheries Science Center is also with us to speak briefly on the unusual climate conditions that we're seeing. Just a reminder, though, this call is for working media only. If you are not a member of the press, you are welcome to listen, but please do not ask questions. This time really is reserved for reporters. Tori, can you please explain for us the process for asking a question?
Absolutely. When it's time to ask a question, you can just hit star one on your touch tone phone, record your name clearly, and then I'll introduce the question. So just hit star one, and then if you want to remove your question, you can hit star two, and that will take it out of the queue.
Thank you so much, Tori. Okay, now let's hear from Justin. Justin, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Again, my name is Justin Vizbicki. I am the California Stranding Network Coordinator for NOAA Fisheries West Coast Region. So we are today announcing our 2015 UME for Guadalupe fur seals. So just briefly, what a UME is, it's a stranding that's unexpected or it involves a significant die-off of any marine mammal population and demands immediate response. So because we've had such high numbers, in fact, in 2015, we have had 80 strandings on record right now of Guadalupe fur seals. Of those, we've had 38 that were live strandings. 42 of those were dead. I'm going to let the other girls talk more specifically about the live and dead responses. But right now, we believe that there's the population estimate on Guadalupe fur seals is somewhere around 15,000. Unfortunately, the last census was done a number of years ago, so we don't really have great population numbers on these animals, and that's part of the challenge with the Guadalupe fur seals. We don't have a lot of information. So we are doing this as a separate UME, as currently we also have our California sea lion UME that is running. This one, again, is separate. The California sea lion one is still currently running. Our numbers in our California facilities are down for California sea lions. We're back to kind of normal running numbers. At this date, we have approximately 50 animals, California sea lions, spread throughout our facilities in California. But we are continuing to monitor that, and we'll be monitoring it up into the next pupping season as we progress and see what's going on. So the California sea lion one is continuing, but numbers have decreased to normal levels at this time of year. The Guadalupe fur seal one is going to be separate. And the reason that this one is actually separate, we talked with our working group, and there was a couple of things that it was, but specifically there's two events that give this one the potential to be separate. Sorry about that. And that is the status of the fur seal population is threatened, so that's a huge thing that we're looking at, and also the breeding and foraging range is different than the California sea lion. So there's some pretty potential big differences in spatial distribution of the strandings. For these guys, so we definitely wanted to consider them separate. So this will be a separate UME from the California sea lions. Just really quickly, for our stranding network, the way that we work with our California with our Guadalupe fur seals is a little bit different because they are a protected species. Our two main facilities that care for Guadalupe fur seals are the Marine Mammal Center and SeaWorld. All of our other facilities are temporary, and they basically will bring the animals in, maintain them, and make sure that they're stable for transport. And that's the great part of our network is that we have a real solid ethic of teamwork, so we all work together, and we're able to pass these critically or these threatened species to our two main facilities where we can give them the best care. I think at this point I'm going to turn it over to Tanaya to talk about, or was it Sue? We're going to talk about the live and the dead. Each one of them is going to talk a little bit differently about what we're finding out there with these animals when they're stranding. So I'll turn it over to, was it Tanaya that was going to go first?
Yes.
Okay. I'll turn it over to Tanaya.
So Tanaya Norris from the Marine Mammal Center. And our organization has rehabilitated 33 of the 38 Guadalupe fur seals that have stranded live this year. The other institution, as Justin mentioned, is SeaWorld. 11 of those animals made it to release, and all 11 of the animals were released with telemetry instruments that allow us to track where they go and how they dive post-release. Of the ones that stranded, most of them were pups that were born in 2014. We also had four adult females that stranded, one of which was pregnant, the first stranded pregnant Guadalupe fur seals that has been admitted to the Marine Mammal Center. There has been evidence, and some of the animals have been diagnosed with domoic acid toxicity, but most of them have been severely emaciated, and that's their primary reason for stranding. We, in previous years, just to give you context, we've been stranding or responding to stranded Guadalupe fur seals since 1977. Prior to this year, the most we've had in any other year is 5 Guadalupe fur seals. So this year we've had 33, quite a significant increase in numbers. We have put satellite instruments, those telemetry instruments I mentioned earlier, on 9 Guadalupe fur seals that have been released prior to this year. And most of them, or all of them, have remained south of Cape Mendocino in California. This year, the animals that we released with telemetry instruments all traveled quite a bit farther north post-release. We had at least 5 animals that made it up to northern Washington, Vancouver Island, and even slightly north of Vancouver Island that showed from their tracking data until the tag stopped transmitting. So I think that that's an overview of what we've seen this year, and I will turn it over to Sue to talk about the dead animal response.
Good morning, everybody. The California Academy of Sciences' primary role in any dead marine mammal response is to go out and collect data. We want to note this animal's presence in its time and space. And if it's something that we're interested in collecting, we'll go ahead and collect specimens, research specimens, to archive here. We've been doing that for decades, but we've really been focusing on marine mammals probably for the last 25 or 30 years. We have data and local parts going back that far. With this Guadalupe fur seal die-off, you know, I got my first Guadalupe in March, and that didn't seem completely abnormal because they leave Guadalupe Island to wherever they go after in February. But I started to see an uptick in April and kind of brought it to the attention of my my network of people with the Marine Mammal Center and NOAA, that there was something unusual going on, and we got it on the radar and really increased our diligence in trying to find out what was going on, why this was happening, and then it really took a big uptick in May. That was our busiest month. The area that we cover is from the Santa Cruz, San Mateo County line all the way up through Lower Mendocino, so all of the animals that we were examining were coming from those areas. They were the same age class as the ones we were seeing at the Marine Mammal Center, and they were in the same condition. A lot of them were emaciated, and they're in a poorer condition, obviously, because some of them have been floating out at sea or they've been scavenged and things like that. So our primary goal is to try and get as much information from these animals and try and fill out some scientific holes that exist with this animal. This is a very poorly studied species, So we're taking this opportunity to try and really fill in some gaps and learn a little bit more about this threatened animal.
Thanks, Sue. Hey, this is Justin. This is Vicki one more time. I also wanted to mention, I forgot to throw out a couple of numbers to you guys that are probably will tie in this up nicely. When Tanaya is talking, she's speaking specifically about the Marine Mammal Center numbers. For the state of California, from 2009 to 2014, we averaged just under 10 Guadalupe fur seal strandings per year. The 20-year average from 84 to 2014, actually the 30-year average, would be about 12 animals per year. So, you know, right around 10 to 12 animals per year is our average. And, again, this year in 2015, we're at 80 at this point in the year already. So we're significantly higher than what we would normally expect here in California. And I'll turn it over to Toby now to talk a little bit about what's going on the ocean.
Good morning or afternoon. This is Toby Garfield. I'm with the Southwest Fisheries Science Center, and I assume most of you know that conditions in the Pacific Ocean have been anomalous for almost 2 years now. It started in the winter of 2013-14, where a warm patch of water showed up in the Gulf of Alaska. Washington State meteorologist named it the Blob, and so you've probably seen that coming through the press. And in addition to that, there's an associated high-pressure ridge. I don't know which caused which, but anyways, the high-pressure ridge out in the Gulf of Alaska really helped redirect the storm patterns so that instead of the winter storms coming down towards Oregon and California, they stayed up north towards Washington and Canada and were much warmer. So we've had almost 2 years of anomalously warm conditions in the eastern Pacific, both in the Gulf of Alaska and also off Baja California. And the result of that is we've seen some real species changes, especially in a lot of the forage fish that the fur seals and sea lions would be feasting on, if you will. So now on top of that, we finally do have a El Nino declared. This is looking like it's going to be a fairly strong El Nino. It's definitely established in the equatorial region in the tropics. But the impact of the El Nino hasn't really hit this part of the coast yet. It'll hit in another couple months. So we're still under these anomalous conditions. They're not unheard of conditions. We have, besides El Nino, we have these ocean atmospheric patterns. One's called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. Another one is called the North Pacific Gyre Oscillation. And we're seeing patterns that we've seen in the past. But what's different this year is the persistence of this pattern as well as just how anomalously warm the water has been for almost 2 years now. And so we think that warm water condition has really changed the range of quite a few of the forage fish species that the fur seals would be going after. So it looks like, I was just checking, the warm conditions are still very strong off Baja and off the Gulf of Alaska. So we expect these conditions to persist for a few more months, and the El Nino is expected to peak this winter or sometime in the spring. So those are the present environmental conditions that these animals are living with.
Okay, great. Thank you, guys. At this time, we're going to open up for reporter questions. I believe you need to press star one, reporters, to ask a question. But, Tori, can you please explain again how to unraise their hand if they would like to do that as well?
Absolutely. If you'd like to ask a question, just hit star one on your touch-tone phone and record your name. If you'd like to withdraw your question, you can hit star two. It'll take just a moment for those questions to come through.
All right, it looks like our first question is from James Gorman from the New York Times. We can go with him.
Hello? Go ahead, Mr. Gorman. Your line's open.
Thank you. What are the forage fish that have declined, and where do those numbers come from?
Justin, do you want that one, or do you want me to try?
So if you want to go ahead with that one and try that one.
Forage is just a general term that we use for a lot of the midwater fish that various species from salmon up through marine mammals eat. And what's been happening is that a lot of them, you know, they don't know geographic boundaries. They are much more interested in the water conditions. And as the waters have gotten warmer, a lot of them have moved their ranges farther north than we normally see. And we're seeing some of the southern species move into this region as well.
Can you tell me what the species are and what surveys or data those observations are based on?
Well, the observations are based on we go out, the fisheries goes out and does a number of different types of surveys. They do a coastal pelagic survey every spring. There's also the Cal Coffee program that goes out and tries to catch larval fish to see what the conditions are out there. And if I were to, I am not a biologist, so if you want a good list of the different species, and I quite honestly don't know what the seals prefer to eat, mm-hmm. I would pass that on and say we could get that information to you.
Okay.
Sure. And this is Justin Visbicki. We know one of the things that we've been reading about is that, you know, the Guadalupe fur seals, that one of their prey of preference is the squid. So that's been noted as that they are they prefer squid, and they've been noted to eat those. They have been noted to eat some other things, but squid has been the main diet. At least that's what's been noted in most of the papers that are out there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the Associated Press, Christopher Weber.
Yes, thank you. You say this event is separate from the sea lion event. Is there any reason to think that they're connected, however?
This is Justin again from NOAA Fisheries. I think that there's, you know, that's they're in the ocean and they're sharing the same space, so there's always that possibility that they are connected, but because they're such a different species and they do have different ranges and some different forage that we've noted, that there is enough difference to separate them. But, you know, being in the same type of conditions, you know, that's potentially playing into this for both of them, absolutely.
Thanks.
So just a reminder, if you have a question, just press star 1 to ask that question. We have just one more person in line. Right now we're going to go to the Marin Independent Journal, Mark Prado.
Marin and it's Prado. So I think George Bush. Hey, just quickly for Tamaya, when these animals are released, where are you releasing them?
We release them at our typical release site for pinnipeds, which is Chimney Rock out at Point Reyes Seashore. It's far from people, gets these animals a little closer to the continental shelf, and that's where we have released all of our pinnipeds, most of our pinnipeds, for decades.
Okay, great. And maybe you guys can explain just the movement of these animals. They're born in the Guadalupe Islands, and then what? They come north, or can somebody explain that a little bit, the movement?
So we, as Sue mentioned, we don't have a lot of information on this species, and that ranges from some of the basic natural history up through where they go when they're at sea. There have been some animals that have been tagged with these satellite transmitters. Most of them have been adult females during the time that they would be nursing a pup, so those animals stay pretty local to Guadalupe Island because they have to return to the island to nurse their pup. Really, the only other data that we have right now on where these animals go when they're at sea is from stranded animals that have been released with tags. So SeaWorld and the Marine Mammal Center has tagged this year, I think, 13 total, and in previous years it's probably in the number of 10, I think, for all previous years combined. And as I said, it seems that this year they're going much farther north for the stranded animals than they typically do. So usually they're quite just in Central California. It seems to be as far north as they have gone when they have satellite tags attached to them.
So to see them this far north, you know, Mendocino, Marin, et cetera, that's more of a rarity than normal?
No, not necessarily. I mean, they may always be up in this region foraging off Central California, and we only see them come ashore when they're are big enough numbers. So when there's a warm water event like this year, pushes more of the population farther north, We know that there have been strandings up in Washington and Oregon. There was a UME declared in 2007 for those two states for Guadalupe fur seals. So there's a lot of historic data that shows that they do use the entire California current system.
Okay.
Just don't have a lot of information.
Got it. Okay, that's fine. And one last question for Toby. Hey, Toby, this is Mark at BIJ. I know we talked a lot when you were at Romberg up here in Tiburon. The same weather factors that are impacting California in terms of the drought, it sounds like they're one and the same. They're also affecting the ocean conditions. Is that correct or not necessarily?
Yeah, no, Mark, nice to hear your voice.
Okay.
Yes, what's happened is because this atmospheric pattern, or the ridiculously resilient ridge, as has appeared in the press, has really, it's a high-pressure system, so it's counterclockwise. So it's steering a lot of the moisture up north, and that's part of the reason we're having the droughts in California this year. It's also part of the reason why the snow didn't accumulate this year, because it was bringing warmer temperatures with the precipitation. So they're all connected in various ways.
Okay, great. Maybe I'll ask just one more quick question here. At the top you mentioned with 80 strandings and a population guesstimate of 15,000. It doesn't seem like to be a big percentage, but obviously you're also noticing 80 is a lot more than the general 10 to 12 you might see. So I'm assuming this is an indicator that things are, you're seeing 80, but is more dying, or it just doesn't sound, 80 out of 15,000 doesn't sound like a lot, but I assume that's just an indicator for you guys.
Yeah, as with all of this, Justin Visbicki from Stranding, No Fishery Stranding, I think with all of our strandings, we expect that there's actually more out there. We're only seeing a piece of the pie. What percentage that is, we don't know. But we are, assuming that there are others that are out there that are in the same boat as these guys. We're just not seeing them. So it's something that there's enough that are stranded, and because of their status and because of a lot of those unknowns that we do have, that raises the level of concern to the point where we feel that the unusual mortality event is necessary.
And I'll add to that. This is Tanaya at the Marine Mammal Center. So we know that there are coastal species of marine mammals and kind of more pelagic species for pinnipeds. California sea lions are pretty coastal species. They tend to haul out on land and go on short foraging trips. There's species like the northern fur seal, which in our region is the only other fur seal that we're going to see. Those animals, when they are not tied to their breeding site, so if it's not a nursing mom, they actually take quite long foraging trips to sea. Sometimes I think like 7 to 8 months might be their longest foraging trip. So we think that these Guadalupe fur seals are animals that spend a lot of time at sea, and they aren't ones that you would see hauled out on land throughout the year like you do with California sea lions. So they're natural history and how they forage is quite different. So that might be another reason why 80 doesn't sound like a lot, but for a threatened species and one that we don't know a lot about, that is a pretty big warning sign that we need to pay attention.
Thank you, Tanaya. We're going to go next to Chelsea Harvey with the Washington Post. Chelsea, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. My question actually kind of builds on that. I was also wondering, since this is a threatened species, how concerned it actually is, and you kind of answered that question already. So I'm also wondering, will there be any additional protections that can also be placed over the species while these conditions continue to persist, or is it just a matter of continuing to monitor them and see what happens?
So this is Justin from NOAA Fisheries. At this point, there'll be no additional protections, but we will be increasing our interest, and, with the UME gives us the opportunity to, there's a little bit more focus and a little bit more resources that will help us into this investigation. So we will be, kind of turning the spotlight on these guys the next year and monitoring what's going on to really see if we can dig in and figure out, why are we seeing more coming ashore.
Thank you. Our next question is from the Press Democrat, Mary Callahan. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Mary. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to go back to the numbers that were referenced earlier. I think it was 33 that had been rehabbed at the Marine Mammal Center and 11 released. What is the status of the others?
I'm sorry, what was that?
What is the status of the other 33 that were rehabilitated and the 38 and the other 5 that were stranded live?
Oh, so those other animals that aren't released are ones that die in rehabilitation, or we deem that euthanasia is the, I don't want to say best option, but that is really the only viable option. So all of those animals that die or are euthanized have a complete postmortem examination where we take samples and do a lot of investigation into disease and why they stranded, and really educate us on disease threats that may be present in this population.
And this is California Academy of Sciences. I think almost all of their animals that died were archived here with us. We felt it was really important to archive as many of these animals as we can. We more than doubled our Guadalupe fur seal numbers that we have here in our research collection with this one UME.
All right, Gene Chu from NBC News, you're next, and your line's open. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I guess I'm trying to sort of see the big picture sort of in this, in terms of these animals dying off. And I'm sorry if this sounds like a really elementary question, but, I mean, is it because of the warmer water, or is it affecting the sea lions directly, or is it because of the warmer water reducing the amount of, I guess, forage fish that that these sea lions, you know, eat? And the emaciation, is that a direct cause of not getting enough food, or because of the warm water conditions? And just generally, big picture, what is it with these animals sort of, stranding and poor health? What does it say just about the environment? Is it an indicator of the environment in general in the oceans?
So this is Justin from NOAA Fisheries. I think that, you know, we look at all these animals as indicators for what's out in the environment. You know, we share the same resources. You know, we utilize the same areas. So it's something that we definitely want to keep an eye on. And in particular with this species of concern, it's something that, does kind of raise an eyebrow. And we all say, so that's exactly why we're going to be, putting more effort into looking into this particular situation to try to figure out, that question that you first asked. Is it the warm water? Is it the warm water influencing the prey? And I think that's kind of what we're, along the lines with the California sea lion, where we were looking at, how that warm water moves the prey or the forage distribution, making it harder for those moms to go and get that prey, which then affects the pups. Is that the same thing that's happening here? We don't know. Is it once they wean, there's not enough food that's close enough, they have to go too far to get it? These are all the things that we want to try to figure out, but at this point, we just don't have that answer.
Reporters, again, if you want to ask a question, press star 1. We're going to let James Gorman of the New York Times ask a follow-up question. Go ahead, James.
Hi, thanks very much. I just wanted to get straight exactly what the UME does. Are there any – I know it's more focus and more resources. Are there any specifics that you can give on how much more resources or what that focus consists of?
Well, so this is Justin again from NOAA Fisheries. So we have a working group that has, we have experts from all around the country that are weighing in and looking at kind of the package of evidence that we've put together. It does, there's opportunity possibly for more financial assistance in the future. It's not, nothing's guaranteed, and it's something that we have to work through the working group on that might be able to assist us in both doing the investigations on the dead animals and then possibly putting, more effort into helping with the rehabilitation and release of those wild, of the ones that we do bring in. Obviously with a threatened species, the more that we can bring out of our rehab, process and be able to put them back out there is something that we look at as a real positive. So we will put more effort into all of those things. And again, it just really, the financial part of it is always something that we look into, and it's just not a guarantee. Anybody else wants to add to that? Otherwise?
No, but I'd like to go back to Gene's question just for a second, if I may. This is Toby Garfield. The fur seals themselves are endothermic. They can control their internal temperature. The problem is their prey. Most of their prey are exothermic, so they rely on the surrounding temperature, and so they are going to adjust their range to be in their preference temperature range. And I hope that clarifies your question a little bit.
Thank you for that. Now, there are no reporter questions in the line right now. Just a reminder that you can press star 1 to get in line to ask a question. I want to also add here, unless I just missed it, I want to add that there's now a website called pay.gov where people can donate to unusual mortality event investigations. Are there any other reporters who'd like to ask a question? Press star 1 to do that. Right now we have no one in line. So I was talking to someone over here at the same time that last question was being asked. If I interrupted somebody's follow-up question, feel free to press star 1, and we'd love to answer your question. All right. Well, any other questions? Star 1. Going once. Going twice. All right. Thank you, Tori, and thank you to everyone for joining our call. If you have any other questions that you think of after this, please feel free to contact myself and my team directly. My name again is Jenny Lyons, and our team phone number is 301-427-8003. Thank you so much for joining us today. And that's the end of this call.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.